This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. Back in 2002, Julie Taymor was the new queen of Broadway, a MacArthur genius and the creator of The Lion King, which became the most lucrative Broadway musical of all time. More recently, she got a lot of attention for being in maybe the most notorious Broadway musical in modern history, Spider-Man, Turn Off the Dark. The budget was enormous, unprecedented. The opening was delayed and delayed again. Actors were injured multiple times. Critics hated it. And disagreements among the creators and producers ended with Taymor getting fired just before opening night. So what do you do when you've suffered such a public flop? You get back to basics. Julie Taymor has returned to Shakespeare in a stunning way. Her version of Midsummer Night's Dream, the most wonderful I've ever seen, begins with a simple bed in the center of the stage. An odd little person in a bowler hat enters and falls asleep on the bed. It's the fairy Puck.
And at the moment that she lies down on the bed, four workmen come out with ropes and hooks, and they hoist up this silk. And what happens is the sheet just pulls out, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger till it fills the full space, a giant rectangle, and it rises up in the air. And magically, this figure who's been sleeping on it rises up with it, leaving the bed on the ground till it goes up into the sky. And as soon as it hits the highest point, clouds appear in a blue sky, their projections on this sheet. And as the clouds move along, it reveals the words, A Midsummer Night's Dream. The idea for the bed, the sheet, was if you take a theater piece and you try and reduce it to its ideograph, to its essence, what could that be? And the word shadows kept coming up all throughout the play. And how do you create shadows? The most simple way is on a blank white piece of paper or a white sheet with a light and your hand or shadows. Everything in the show, almost everything is hand done. Even the simple bit of flying is counterbalanced. So it's, which makes it a lot easier
and
to do.
And you did flying.
We did do flying. Very little. Very little for obvious
but
reasons.
But you got back on that saddle. I was happy to see some flying. And it was beautifully done by this same Puck.
Oh, yeah. No, she's unbelievable actress and so physically not only fit but also capable, and she loved doing it. We went as far as she wanted to go.
And you mentioned, you used the word ideograph.
Yes.
Your attempt to distill the idea of a piece, a story, to a visual image?
If you were to take The Lion King and you were going to take one simple image that represents that show, it would be the circle. So Richard Hudson, the set designer, and I worked on how Pride Rock wouldn't be the kind that was in the animated film but would be actually circular as it came out of the floor and rose up. And then you have Mufasa's mask. Then you have the sun rise, the circle. Then you have the wheels of the gazelle wheel. So in the case of Midsummer, of course, it is that bedsheet. It's a simple, physical, concrete thing that can transform. And I think it's emblematic of the entire piece that Shakespeare wrote. You know, where is reality? What is real? Where are we in our interior landscapes? How do we move from the physical world to the dream world? So as a director is looking for that, not just for the set design, but it is the symbol of the whole piece, and it gives you boundaries. It gives you limitations. And it is scary because you don't know how these kinds of elements, it's not always controllable.
Right.
So you have to have a little bit of that. That is the circus part where you feel a little bit of the danger in a good way, the things where it doesn't always do it exactly the same way every night.
Which is why it's live theater.
That's right. And that's what people love about it.
So the show, as I hope we've conveyed, is stunning looking. The score is also very lush. I particularly love the lullaby that Titania's fairies sing. We're going to play a little bit of that now.
The idea with the children was that they would play all the elements, that they would be the forest, the trees, the animals. They would be your nightmares. They would be the fairies. You know, they would play that, and they even play the children. They finally become even themselves. But the notion is that there is a kind of dark, dangerous wildness to our inner instincts.
Right.
They're also raw.
The play ties up most all of the loose ends, except this one, Demetrius, who's one of the lovers who has this potion that has made him fall in love with the right person. He doesn't get the antidote, so we don't know, is he really in love with Helena?
I've actually gone through two different thoughts about that. At first I thought, wow, how cynical of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Then I thought, no, I think that what this is that sometimes drugs or alcohol or other kinds of stimulants open yourself
convince
up.
You of what is true.
Not even yeah. convince you. Open your eyes and your mind. That's, I mean, during the whole 60s, the whole LSD, which I never took, but many people.
Really?
No.
I would have thought.
I know, but I didn't. But my brother and sister and other people I knew did enough. But at any rate, I think more what Shakespeare is saying, that he was a very uptight, controlled person, and that it took this experience of him to actually see her for who she was. And I prefer that take on it. I prefer the idea that he didn't need the antidote.
It's not a spell.
Yeah.
So you're not a cynic. You're a
romantic. No, I'm not a cynic. I am a romantic, even though I love really dark material.
So for the first couple of decades of your career, you made this big name for yourself as an incredibly innovative, very off-Broadway theatrical artist. And you became a MacArthur genius in 1991. And then you get this call from Disney, who say, we'd like you to turn The Lion King into this huge Broadway musical. At that point in your career, coming from the sort of opposite end of the showbiz spectrum, there must have been some hesitation, no?
There was. But we actually were inspired by the same source material, the fables, the fairy tales, the international fairy tales, and that historically Disney did not shy away from dark things. Even
right.
in The Lion King, Mufasa, the father, dies.
Yeah.
Bambi's mother
Snow White
dies.
Scared me more than any other movie
Absolutely.
I saw as a child.
I mean, Grimm's fairy tales, any of these children's stories are terrifying for a reason.
But, okay, you decide this can work, but then must this big corporate L.A. show business thing, can I trust them?
Well, they said, we want you to do what you do. That's why we're hiring you. We're not hiring you to do Disney style. I said, look, I have a very different aesthetic. And they said, no, we want you to do what you do. And I literally was working with terrific individuals. I wasn't working with a corporation.
Right. So having had this extraordinarily positive experience with your artistic collaborators, your business collaborators, did that sort of trick you into not doing enough due diligence on Spider-Man?
No. What happened with Spider-Man, and we won't dwell on it.
Talk a little bit.
Well, we had a wonderful producer who died.
Yeah.
And he was
before
Tony Adams
opened.
Way before,
yeah.
like 7 years before. And then his partner, who was a lawyer, took over. And then we had the financial crisis and all the money was gone. Meanwhile, I was doing two feature films and an opera, I think, during that 8 years. And I had a great time working on it, a fabulous time. But the third set of producers weren't there from the beginning. So what I said about The Lion King is really the point. You have to be on the same page. Are we all after the same thing? And I think what happened with Spider-Man is by the time we got there, there are two things that happened, or three. One is Bono and Edge weren't available because the timing was we'd run out of there was a deadline by Marvel on when we had to open, and because it had been postponed for various reasons, raising the money or remaking the sets because they'd been trashed, they were on a tour. You can't do a new musical without your composer and lyricist there. Impossible. Secondly, a big set design that was the coup de théâtre didn't work, and we didn't know it. So we didn't have an ending, and we kept struggling. And the third is that the book, though we all had been behind the book, I'm not sure the last set of producers cared. I think that they were investors who became producers and really just wanted to hit whatever that might be.
We got you too. We got Julie Taymor.
Right.
We spent a lot of money. Let's make it a hit.
But as the co-writer, the book never got on stage. We never finished it. The critics came, preempted the reviews because they were angry that we weren't opening. I don't know, all the anger and hostility.
That there were so many months of previews.
But you know, we had the same amount of previews we had as Lion King. But when we went out of town with Lion King and you then allow the show to develop out of town and we made our mistakes,
right.
then you come in, it ends up being the same. And really, we were trying to break – ground on the kind of theater we are doing. Cirque du Soleil in Vegas, they have soft openings for a year because you don't know when you're inventing new flying things. You can't push it fast. You know, you can't do it.
Right.
So why be upset? It took us 5 hours to do a 30-second change because everything was computerized. That's where I love Midsummer, because it's all old-fashioned, hand-run. If we need to say, oh, no, make her go higher, make her go lower, or make this sheet go up or down, it's by humans.
And you had the luck, good or bad, of being this big show opening just as social media was becoming a thing.
Yeah, that was way before you're ready to have people talking about it.
Thousands of volunteer critics.
That's right. And, you know, people say, oh, get used to it, kid. You know, too bad. That's the way life is. And that's true. But it also is true that you will not be able to create as groundbreaking or inventive or dangerous. And I don't mean dangerous and that people get hurt. What I mean is trying to do things that have never been done before. If you're going to have people criticizing you before you say you're ready. Nobody has to buy tickets if it's in previews. They don't have to. A lot of people like to see things before they're finished. And if we postpone, then you get your money back if you don't want to. So there's no reason to come down hard on that. You should let the process happen.
Right.
The idea of this opening date is should be up to the people who are creating.
Right. How long did it take you to say, okay, fine, brush off the dust. Now I'm going to do this other stuff.
Well, I luckily have a great friend in Jeffrey Horowitz, the producer, who did attend opening night of Spider-Man with me. And he had already asked me if I would open his new theater with a production.
At which this Midsummer Night's Dream is
playing. That's right. Yeah. And I had been offered other things. I was going to be part of the Shakespeare Year of Shakespeare in London last year. Actually, I was going to do Macbeth, which would have been, you know, too perfect, actually. A great play about treachery. But I decided I didn't need to live in that.
As opposed to this dreamy, sexy, funny, happy play.
And I've been working. I have two screenplays I'm working on and very close to having the financing for. And now I have actually two television series that I'm working on. And
so you were doing things and it took your mind off the craziness.
Yeah. Well, yeah. To a degree. I mean, you know, I got offered to do a book and I just declined because I just didn't feel that was the thing to do at
good,
the time.
Good move.
Mm-hmm.
You have done films. You are working on more films and television series. Do you get ever as much gratification from a film, from making a film, as you do from your most gratifying theater work?
Yes,
yeah?
Actually. It's not, you know, we all love to be an opening night of your own theater piece, if it's a good opening night,
yeah.
That is, you know, because it is wonderful to be there with the audience, and it's live. There is no comparison
right.
to live theater and film that way, although premieres are pretty exciting.
I guess it's like pornography versus sex, right?
I guess, think so, yeah. It's a little distant, right?
Yeah.
So, but if you create a film like Frida, for instance, which wasn't my project, I was work for hire. But it became my baby as I got involved in it and really worked on it with Salma.
Salma Hayek played Frida Kahlo.
Yeah, Frida Kahlo. With Frida, it was interesting. In America, they go, oh, this is such a dark. Why is the film so colorful? Why has it got all this? Because that's how Frida survived.
Right.
That is Mexican as well, the color there. But it was really the bows, the ribbons, the color in her paintings. It was the way that she did it. How she enjoyed her life through the darkness is the main point of that film. That's why I didn't dwell on the politics or on the morose. There are the dark moments, but it's also got that incredible absolute thirst and love to make whatever you have happen. And people go, why would you do Titus? Because look at Titus. It is the greatest dissertation on violence ever written. We need to tell those stories and understand. In fact, I wrote down in your 360, what have you liked lately? And I'm just finishing Breaking Bad. I have two more. I'm going to finish it today. Titus in a contemporary setting. You know, the protagonist is a good man. And how does a good man turn into this monster? And that's why I think Titus is such a great play. And it was so disturbing for hundreds of years for people because it tells you about how anybody can actually go to that dark place.
Well, keep making work. I want to keep saying. Julie
Taymor,
thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Julie Taymor's production of A Midsummer Night's Dream is up through January in New York City. You can see some pictures of the show at studio360.org. Julie Taymor and I also talk some more about her time directing the unfortunate Spider-Man musical. You can hear our whole conversation at our website.
Star stars shining right above you. Night breezes seem to whisper, I love you. Birds singing in the sycamore tree. Dream a little dream of me. Say nighty-night and kiss me. Just hold me tight and tell me you miss me. While I'm alone and blue as can be.